Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, Steven Spielberg, who this week said he wishes he had not revised the 20th edition of E.T. the Extraterrestrial, replacing the guns held by federal agents with walkie-talkies.
I should never have messed with the archive of my own work, and I don't recommend anybody really do that. Your film, all our movies are a kind of measuring, sort of a signpost of where we were when we made them.
But why would anyone want to preserve a historical record of things from the past we now know were wrong when we could pretend they never happened at all by bringing the offensive bits into compliance with our current standards? This position by Spielberg is just inexplicable.
For me, it is sacrosanct. It's something that is our history. It's our cultural
warts.
It's our cultural heritage.
Warts and all.
Yeah, I do not believe in censorship that way.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. According to the unanimous vote of the Second Presbyterian Convocation in Trinidad and Tobago, we are never, ever supposed to use the C word. Censorship is, of course, essential to what we believe in practice, but we have not yet successfully rescued this vital term from the unfair negative impression most Americans have of it. Therefore, even an apprentice wokist knows never to use this word, especially not in a way that perpetuates the unfair bigotry against it. But Spielberg went even farther.
No film should be revised based on the lenses we now are either voluntarily or being forced to peer through.
Being forced to peer through? Look, it's bad enough for him to publicly express regret for his own choices born of good faith, but to imply that there's something wrong with forcing others to revise their art from the past by menacing their livelihoods today? What tools of cultural reformation will be left to us then? Fear and coercion are our best methods. You can't just have every director, author, painter, musician, poet, and sculptor running around creating whatever art they think is appropriate. You'd never get the kind of unified culture of diverse sameness which we long for. But I will say just this one thing. Even with the guns properly removed from the loving, benevolent hands of the kind federal agents who visit the family for the cover-up and re-education training, E.T. has many other serious problems that we should remedy. Yes, we certainly appreciate the attempt to normalize drag by having E.T. dress up as an elderly woman, but the truth is that audiences laughed at this scene, which means it caused more harm to transvestite and transgender persons than good. And since Hadrigan's Woketopian Thesaurus reminds us that laughter is violence, this means that E.T. as a drag queen is responsible for killing people. Also, the Halloween scenes are no good, in which E.T. wears ghost face, both marginalizing apparitions everywhere and appropriating their supernatural culture very callously. And then he and the other younglings parade around town for Halloween as they beg for their obesity bars from strangers. And the opening scene with the children sitting at the table eating pizza? I think not for a family that should more properly be in compliance with St. Michelle Obama's Let's Move Food Codes of 2015. Not only must E.T. be submitted for the Cultural Suitability Board for serious revision, but Steven Spielberg's opposition to such reforms means he must be cast out. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to celebrate the excellent work being done by Nintendo in remedying a deep cultural injustice embedded at the heart of its Super Mario Bros. Universe. No, not the oft misunderstood authentic accent of Italian-American carpenter turned plumber Mario.
Oh yeah, Mario!
Or his equally authentically accented brother Luigi.
I'm a Luigi, number one.
No. We're not talking about Nintendo fixing any of the fundamental speciesism of using turtles as weapons, or the sexist objectification of Princesses Peach and Daisy, or even the glorification of capitalism in snatching coins as a life goal. No, it turns out the real problem in the Mario Brothers universe was an obscure character named Blackie, whom they have renamed as Spike. Even though Blackie was named for his black facial hair and not in order to offend African Americans who have historically been referred to with this slur, this was an important opportunity for Nintendo to follow Bikram's fifth rule of virtue signaling. The smaller the change you make, the more diligent you appear for making it. So good for you, Nintendo, and after all, we forgive so many of your other issues due to the massive contribution to equity you made in giving us the glorious Mario Kart race course Rainbow Road, an eternal and living tribute to all people of the acronym blessed be their letter. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, a word of encouragement for the fine work being done at the Olympia, Washington School District, where 4th and 5th grade band and orchestra are being cut in part due to the budget problems, but also because they're racist. As school board director Scott Clifthorne explained last week,
we're a school district that lives in, is entrenched in, and is surrounded by white supremacy culture.
But really, in this racist land of ours, who isn't? Nevertheless, Clifthorne explained that band and orchestra might not seem to be inherently a part of white supremacy culture, but oh yeah, they are.
There's nothing about string or wind instrumental music that is intrinsically white supremacist. However, the ways in which it is...
It's obvious if you look at it carefully. In part, the vast majority of the composers and professional musicians are white, but that's not the real issue. No, elementary music programs are racist because they take children of color away from core studies, which, due to systemic racism, they need more time on than children without color. Naturally, we must end band and orchestra to make sure black and brown kids get enough time in math and English classes and aren't distracted with time-wasting pursuits and white pursuits, like music. But the even more fundamental problem is that music programs celebrate the concepts of achievement and excellence as ideals, both of which are bedrock elements of, that's right, white supremacy culture.
There are other folks in the community that experience things like a tradition of excellence as exclusionary.
After all, what can be more excluding than a concept like excellence? As the patron saint of cultural guidance, Kurt Vonnegut, pointed out in Harrison Bergeron, his classic primer on educational equity, the most important thing is for everyone to be equal. Besides, as we now know, the only reason some children do better than others at arbitrary white cultural practices like band and orchestra is because they're beneficiaries of systemic racism. Therefore, to reward or even praise betterness or excellence is to participate in the violence of that racism. The only way to truly avoid excluding some kids from music is to exclude all kids from music. Yes, let all children be completely equal in their governmental mandated and unmusical mediocrity. Only then shall we achieve paradise here on earth. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.